Good afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the Committee on Taxes to order for April 9th, 2024. There was an error in the minutes, so we'll just be approving them next time we meet. So first up on the agenda, we have House File 3605 from Chair Joachim. Representative Joachim is going to move that House File 3605 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. So Representative Joachim, you have a DE1 that is in the packet. Would you like to move your author's amendment?
Yes, Chair Gomez, I would like to move the DE1. It actually incorporates some suggestions that the Department of Revenue made.
All right. So Representative Joachim has moved the DE1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, no. Motion carries. The DE1 is adopted. And Representative Joachim, the bill is in the form you'd like. To your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Gomez. Thank you for hearing 3605 today. This bill is about leveling the playing field among our nonprofit child care centers. Currently, nonprofit child care centers that own the building that their facility is in are exempt from property taxes, but those who rent the space for their facility do not receive any property tax exemptions. The idea for this bill was brought to me by one of my local early childhood centers in Hopkins, Kids Zone, and Marcy Durkings is here today with Kids Zone. They were originally located in St. Louis Park within a church building where they were able to receive the property tax exemption. But due to the portion of the church property being sold for development for multi-unit housing, the child care center had to relocate. The property they rented in Hopkins was an old commercial building, and Kids Zone quickly found out that they no longer qualified for the property tax exemption, even though their nonprofit status had not changed. When I took a tour of their new facility, I'd asked what some of their barriers were to being able to provide affordable services to their families and a livable wage for their employees. The cost of their rent was near the top of the list, so I did a little research and realized the inequity in the statutes. This bill would provide a property tax refund for nonprofit daycares who rent their facilities and mirrors some of the savings their counterparts who own their own buildings receive. It is structured similar to a renter's credit, with the owner of the building providing a certificate of gross rent paid to the owner of the child care center that is renting in their building. The owner of the child care center would then be able to submit this certificate along with the appropriate paperwork to show their nonprofit status to the Department of Revenue for a refund that would equal 10% of their gross rent paid. The bill also does require the Department of Revenue to submit the amount of rent submit the amount of rent constituting the property taxes paid by eligible centers to the committee by March of 2025, so we can just see what it looks like and how many people took advantage of it, so we can move forward from there. So, chairs and members, our child care facilities are facing many challenges. This is just one way to provide them with a little bit of relief in their overhead. With me today, I have two directors of child care centers in my area. First, I have Marisha Durkings, the executive director from the Kids Zone Early Learning Center. Chair Gomez, if you'd like to have her come up first.
Yeah, so I'm going to move now to testifiers. I have two testifiers who've signed up. First up is Marcy Durking. Welcome to the committee. Please just state your name as you get started with your testimony.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Marcy Durking.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Yeah. So I am the director at Kids Zone Early Learning Center, and as Representative Joachim had mentioned, we had previously been located in St. Louis Park, but were displaced for a housing development, which is fantastic, but we needed to find a new place, and we were looking kind of all over the area and ended up finding somewhere that we could rent in Hopkins. And the reason we chose to rent as opposed to buy was to try and stabilize our budget and keep things as consistent as we can. But what we have found is that our property has been increased in value, nearly doubled over the last 2 years. So now we have a $138,000 property tax bill that is due. And as you know, early childhood is in a critical state right now. We barely are paying livable wages, if we are. And with so much of our revenue, which is tuition-based, going to payroll and then into the rent and property tax, it's becoming pretty cost prohibitive for us to continue in this state. So we're just looking to be included in the nonprofits that own as opposed to rent.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Up next is Kylie Cooper. Welcome to the committee. Please just state your name and get as you get started with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Kylie Cooper. I'm here to speak in favor of House File 3605. I'm the executive director for Rise Early Learning Center, which is a nonprofit early childhood program in St. Louis Park that opened at the beginning of this year. Each member of the committee, I'm sure, is very aware of the different challenges that exist in running a child care program. We have low margins that often result in low stagnant wages for our staff, heightened costs of tuition shouldered by parents. For us, 82% of our annual budget goes to staff salary and benefits. The remaining 18% is for general operating, food, and facility needs. My program is incredibly fortunate to not be obligated to cover any of the rent. We cover only common area maintenance, and that's due to our partner in common bond communities where we're co-located. If we were to pay rent, it would be over 10% of our annual budget, and that would leave us with difficult decisions about where we would cut, whether it's services staff or raising tuition for families. With that burden alleviated for us, we've been able to implement pay parity for our teachers. We have a great staffing model. We maintain low ratios, and we can be sure that we're providing the best quality of care and education for our program. We're able to serve the population that we've set out to. If we were to own our space, we'd be entitled to the property tax break, but there's nothing that extends that break to programs who rent their spaces. The implementation of this model disproportionately disadvantages programs who are new or who may not have the capital up front to purchase their own spaces, or programs like mine who are built in a model of community collaboration as its basic design. At this point, childcare programs need incentives to be bold, to expand, and to grow. And this bill is a step in the right direction that enables programs to allocate funds where they can be the most impactful, the pockets of parents and the pockets of the providers, without adding an additional penalty to the property owner. So this bill is correcting an inequity that already exists in the marketplace and will have a noticeable impact for nonprofit centers. And I urge successful passage of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who hasn't signed up who wishes to testify on House File 3605 as amended? Not seeing any, we'll move to member discussion. Is there any member discussion? Chair. Representative Pinto.
I'm going to play to type. Thank you, Chair. And I've been fairly quiet about early childhood issues, but thank you so much, Chair Joachim, for advancing this. And there's just a ton of things that we need to do to try to address this, both incredibly a messed up and incredibly important sector. And so this is one piece of that work, and so grateful to you for it. The economics just don't work, and they wouldn't work for K-12, and makes no sense why we think they'd work for 0-4. But any help we can give, especially to nonprofits that are stepping in this way, feels like it'd be really good to do if we're able to. So thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Representative Joachim, for bringing this bill forward. I did tour one of my child care facilities and heard the same concerns. My question would be, they were for profit, but the rent thing is a real big deal for them too, because they don't own their building. Would there be, if it's for the help of the child care centers to help our families, should we be including for profit also? Because when they rent, it does impact their bottom line. Thank you.
Representative Joachim.
Chair Gomez, Representative Goody, that is a good question. When I was approaching this, I was approaching it as a leveling the playing field for now and then collecting the data so we could see what it would look like going forward to maybe expanding that as well. So it was more this year about looking at just that parity.
All right. Thank you. Is there Representative Swidzinski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the author be willing to maybe kind of do the experiment and the data collection from the profit side to kind of gather that? You know, just switch which ones we're going to gather the data from and kind of look at it from that perspective to kind of help develop, you know, for-profit business first and then look at the nonprofit side because they have different advantages that for-profit centers potentially don't have.
Representative Joachim.
Chair Gomez, Representative Studinski. If it were a budget year, I'd say yes. But since we are on a tight budget in a surplus and bonding year, I would want to just start with this parity right now. But definitely a conversation we need to continue to have, because renting and owning is different when it comes to our child care centers and trying to figure out how the best way we can help them with that overhead cost.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Joachim, I'm just looking at the packet here. There's a letter from the Minnesota Child Care Association, Claire Sanford. I think she makes a good point and on the spot here. That the bill would obviously be meaningful to nonprofit child care centers, but the fact remains that the vast majority of child care centers in the United States, both centers and in-home, and particularly smaller providers, operators of on a for-profit model, would also benefit from this, similar to the other comments. But also, I believe we're looking at spending over $500 million this biennium. It's hard to say that it's not a budget year.
I didn't hear a question in there. Is there anybody else who wishes to raise perhaps a different point? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Chair, and apologies for going a second time.
But no, please.
Just wanted to note, I appreciate in what I hear in my colleagues' points an underlying recognition, as the letter from Child Care Association says, that this is, that early care and learning, just like K-12 learning, is a public good that deserves public support. We had tremendous investments last session in recognition of that, that went quite a bit to those providing child care and early learning on, we could call it for-profit. I mean, really, it's barely, I mean, as this says, I mean, the margins are incredibly thin. We've got huge concerns. And so I guess I really appreciate the recognition that this is, in fact, a public good deserving of public support. We need to have a broader conversation about that. I guess I view this bill as the Chair Joachim said, is simply, leveling the playing field in one small point. But, boy, if we could have a commitment among all of us to say that this public good deserves significant public investment, property tax exemption, that's good, that's nice. Broadly, we need to recognize that that the investments we make in those early years pay off for all of us all the way along. And I really am heartened by what I'm hearing in the comments on this bill, and I hope we can continue that in future years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what the bill does do that I like, it recognizes the fact that we have a ton of regulations on our businesses. We also have a ton of taxes on our businesses. And to go to whether you rent or own a property, you know, maybe the other side of the aisle would recognize that the temporary tax on commercial industrial businesses that was imposed as a temporary tax and now seems to continue to go on and on, maybe the other side of the aisle might consider eliminating the tax on commercial industrial altogether and not pick just one sector that's struggling economically, but we have a whole variety of businesses in every sector that continue to have meet their bottom line. And eliminating, but I would even start with reducing the commercial industrial property tax on all our commercial and industrial property and recreational property. Get rid of that whole tax and help all our businesses.
Right, so we have a bill in front of us that doesn't concern that, but we'll go to Representative Joachim.
Madam Chair,
You're not recognized right now. Representative Joachim has the floor, Representative Kosnick. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Yes, this really is a simple bill about leveling the paying field, but if we want to talk about CI property tax, that property tax was put in place when we collapsed the tax rates for buildings and commercial and industrial. We're getting a large break, and we're trying to figure out a way to make sure that folks were paying into our education system, which, as a reminder, 38% of our state budget goes to our education system, which our commercial and industrial folks benefit from, like as we all do, to have well-educated employees. So that is definitely a conversation for the other day. Over the years, we have frozen the levy on that. We've exempted the first $200,000 or $150,000 of property. It's been a while since I've been property tax chair, but of property from that. And that is definitely a discussion to have another day, but not on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Is there any further discussion on the bill? All right, not seeing any. Any closing comments for us, Representative Joachim?
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Letters in the packet are more letters of support, And thank you for time and attention and the stimulating conversation. Our child care centers across Minnesota, as Chair Pinto said, are facing many challenges. This bill is just one little way we can level the playing field and provide them with some relief in their budgets. I would ask for your support as the House tax bill for this session is put together. And thank you for your indulgence, Chair Gomez.
Thank you very much, Representative Joachim. And with that, Representative Joachim will renew her motion that House File 3605, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. Next up on the agenda is House File 4555 from Representative Howard. As he moves up, Representative Howard will move that House File 4555 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Welcome, Representative Howard. I understand there's an A2 author's amendment.
Yes, Chair Gomez. I would move the A2, which makes some changes based on our dialogue and feedback with Minnesota counties and cities to create more flexibility that they're requesting.
All right. So Representative Howard has moved the A2. Is there any discussion on that motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor of adopting the A2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. The A2 is adopted. The bill is in the form you'd like. Representative Howard, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. Members, as you know, last year we passed a quarter-cent metro-wide sales tax for housing, as well as statewide housing aid, delivering for the first time significant new ongoing resources for our counties and cities across the state to address their local housing unique challenges. As a reminder, some of the uses of this new resource for counties and cities is direct supports like rental assistance to prevent homelessness and increase housing stability, the ability to provide resources to build new units of affordable housing to rent, and also affordable home ownership opportunities, as well as the ability to preserve the quality, affordable, and supportive housing that we already have. Since this new resource has been implemented, we're just beginning to see cities and counties come together and decide what they're going to use these resources to tackle in their community. And we're seeing exciting examples across the state. I would note Hennepin County, who plans to use their resources in a myriad of ways to support and prevent homelessness through a new rental assistance model, efforts to preserve and create new units of home ownership and rental. And all told, their yearly estimate, this is going to impact more than 1,200 households in one county alone. That shows members the promise of what can happen when we provide direct local resources that are flexible for our cities and counties to address housing needs. What this bill seeks to do is to make sure that we're maximizing the impact of those dollars and making sure that those new dollars are in fact going to support new investments in housing. So what this bill does is clarifies really our legislative intent last year, which is that these resources should supplement, not supplant, existing locally funded housing endeavors. And as I mentioned, the amendment provides much more flexibility for cities and counties for how we kind of get at this mechanism and guidance. In addition, this bill does clarify or add eligible uses in terms of what the resources can be utilized for at the local level to support more of the entire continuum of housing and to provide more tools to our cities and counties to address local needs. So, In closing, we're just beginning to see the impact of this new resource for our cities and counties, and this bill seeks to make sure we're maximizing that impact. And with that, I'll turn it over to testifiers and look forward to the discussion.
Thank you very much, Representative Howard. So I have a few testifiers signed up. First up is Libby Murphy.
Hello, Chair Gomez.
Hello, welcome back to the committee. Please just state your name as you get started with your testimony.
Yes, Chair Gomez, members of the committee, my name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership.
MHP provides direct technical assistance to rural and tribal communities here in the state of Minnesota, as well as nationally. We produce original research on housing trends here in the state of Minnesota, and we advocate at the federal and state level for housing policies to advance equity and housing. So Minnesota Housing Partnership worked with Chair Howard, I think, for years on the conception of the local housing aid program. And so we worked with lawmakers over a number of years, including last year, on the language. And I can say with confidence that all of the proposed changes reflect the initial intent of lawmakers and housing advocate stakeholders. It was always the intent that the state resources would supplement, not replace, any existing local investments. Housing is critical. It's at the foundation of everything in our households, and it's critical to our thriving communities, and we need to treat it as such. Language included in the bill to support nonprofit housing providers was intentionally broad. The thought was that it would be flexible to meet current challenges that are facing the sector, to respond to ongoing and underfunded systems needs, and to adapt to future unknowns. It's become clear that this language needs to be clarified, that that broadness isn't providing the necessary clarity to counties and cities. And so the changes proposed today make it very explicit about how those funds can be used to help nonprofits provide the most dignified, safe, and responsive housing. Also, when we think about the bill's intention to build and preserve more housing, we need sources to help provide operating support and services so that we can provide that safe, dignified, and responsive housing to our residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy. Up next, Matt Hilgart. And on deck is Reverend Nancy Nord-Bentz. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Hilgart. Please just state your name as you get started with your testimony.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I also drew the short straw today, and I'm representing the Minnesota Intercounty Association as well as the League of Minnesota Cities. We're trying to consolidate our comments back on this bill. I want to start with gratitude for Chair Howard and his work and collaboration. I don't know if I can say countless of hours, but certainly at least two or three hours spent cumulatively talking with cities and counties on this, the original bill, as well as the amendment that you see in front of you today. So we do appreciate that engagement, and I believe that we share all the same goals that were enumerated just before I started my testimony. I want to provide comments first on the underlying bill that is not changed and cite a couple lines that we are extremely grateful to. Line 1.9 that provides expansion to supportive services, as well as lines 2.16 through 2.25 to expand a little bit more about what qualified expenditures entail. To the amendment, another note of gratitude for Chair Howard's work on providing us a little bit more comfort on the maintenance of effort. For those who have been in front of the tax committee for a while, you'll remember that local governments get a little reticent and nervous when MOEs or maintenance of efforts are put into law. We do think that there are notable disadvantages and negative outcomes associated with the MOEs depending on how they're written. And I think this maintains the ideal, which we hear very clearly, and I'll state for the record, is to supplement, not supplant, existing expenditures in housing, but also provides us some flexibility on how to meet that. So I want to thank Chair Howard for that and the continued conversations on that, especially if there's downturns in just general state funding for counties and cities and how we might be flexible within those parameters. The last thing I want to end with is probably the least popular item, but it is something that I just like to continue brainstorming, and that is how we are going to be administratively supporting some of the projects and expansions and programs that you're requesting of us. It's noteworthy to remind folks that this will be hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of a decade that local governments will be using. For example, Dakota County is setting up a new emergency assistance program geared towards families and individuals coming out of shelter to bring permanency and stable housing. That will be Dakota County programming. That will be Dakota County staff. That's not their entire expenditures, it's only a portion, but that will require staffing. And right now, we're not able to use in either a portion of these funds or any percentage for that staffing. And so we would request to continue working with Chair Howard to meet the goal, which is to be spending on outcomes, people, projects, and programs, not bureaucracy, but also to afford us the ability to try to find some way to finesse language to support the staffing needs that are obviously detailed by the hundreds of millions of dollars in resources that will be coming out. So I'll end there, and thank you very much for the continued conversations and your work already on this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. Up next is Reverend Nancy Nord-Bentz. Welcome to the committee. Please just state your name as you get started with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Vice Chair Norris, committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of 4555, and thank you, Representative Howard, for championing this bill. I'm Reverend Nancy Nord-Bentz, Public Policy Manager at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Beacon is a true collaborative of more than 100 congregations that creates new supportive housing, sustains 20 affordable housing developments for over 1,100 residents, and advocates for every Minnesotan to have a home. Supportive housing, which combines rental assistance and specialized services, is the most effective intervention to end chronic homelessness. But the model is at the breaking point. The rapid increase in the amount and acuity of need, skyrocketing expenses, staff shortages, and aging housing stock are just some of the challenges nonprofit providers like Beacon face. Beacon strongly supports HF 4555 because it will help meet the needs of nonprofit providers and our residents. This bill includes three critical provisions. One, it mandates that housing revenue, as we've heard from the Metro sales tax, be used to supplement local housing assistance, not supplant it. Two, it allows the revenue to be used to rehabilitate and preserve financially distressed existing affordable housing. And three, it expands the permitted use of this revenue to include supportive housing services and operations, such as enhanced security, which has become a costly necessity in the midst of the opioid crisis. To ensure the safety of our residents, Beacon now provides 24/7 security at some of our buildings, an unfunded expense of $200,000 to $400,000 per development per year. Increasing and unforeseen financial burdens like this threaten decades of progress in helping the most vulnerable Minnesotans attain housing security. The legislature acted courageously last year by creating the Metro sales tax to fund local housing aid. We cannot thank you enough for this vital support. Now we ask you to approve key policy changes to make that legislation even more effective. We urge you to pass HF 4555. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Reverend Nord-Bentz, for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public that wish to testify on House File 4555 as amended? Not seeing any. Move to member discussion. Last call. All right. We almost got through. No, I'm just kidding. Representative Robbins, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I was trying to...
Never apologize for asking a question. Representative Robbins.
Get my thoughts together. So I appreciate this bill. I have worked on and off on housing issues and homelessness for a long time, since the Plante administration. I understand the need for supportive housing. But my understanding when we passed this last year was that this was about developing and preserving existing housing or new housing, like physical housing structure. And I just feel like we are doing a bait and switch here, that was what this was all premised on last year, with a big tax increase, hundreds of millions of dollars has been testified, and now all of a sudden, before it's even really rolling, we're saying, oh, plus all the supportive housing stuff. I feel like we are lessening the impact of what we really need. Not that we don't need supportive housing, I get it, we do, but that already has an ecosystem. And so I would just like you to address why you're doing this, because I'm very uncomfortable with it. Thank you.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Representative Robbins. The bill last year that we passed really was a big focus, and honestly where we really started with, how do we create new resources to build more housing, because we have this massive housing shortage. But we also recognized, and as we passed this bill last year, that there is a continuum of needs across housing. That's why in working with our cities and counties, we recognize that the needs are different, city to county, metro, greater Minnesota. So in the bill last year, it is a fairly flexible eligibility of uses that sort of stretches preserving the homes that we do have, as well as building new, as well as providing direct assistance to folks, as well as providing pathways to build new homes to own, affordable home ownership. So I really view the additional language more as clarifying than adding new uses. The bill last year, called out supportive housing. We're just adding a little more definition of what that could entail in this bill. So that would be my answer. And it is a challenge because the needs are so great everywhere across the housing continuum. So I recognize that the more you add uses, the more you're sort of potentially, kind of divvying this up. But we think that this tool, providing those flexible tools for cities and counties to address the needs that are most needed in their area, is a prudent measure.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I really would have liked to have seen the impact of this without the supporting housing piece for a few years and see if we were really moving the needle before you added this in. So I hope at a future point in this process you will reconsider, because I feel like that was that this will really water down the impact of what's needed the most. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Is there anyone else who has any questions or statements to make about this bill? Not seeing any. Representative Howard, any closing comments?
Chair Gomez, members, I just want to thank all of the testifiers, folks that have worked over a number of years on this bill, and I really want to thank the counties and cities who we continue to work with to sort of strike the right balance. And I share what Mr. Hilgart said, that I think that our values and our goals are in the right place, in the same place, and that'll help us continue on this path forward and meet the goal of this bill, which is to make sure that more Minnesotans have a safe, stable place to call home. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Howard. With that, Representative Howard is going to renew his motion that House File 4555 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax budget bill, and it is laid over. Thank you. Up next is House File 5194. Chair Vang, welcome. So I'm going to move that House File 5194 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. And I understand, Chair Vang, that you have an author's amendment.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Great.
I believe it deletes a section on the local option sales tax.
Construction materials,
yeah, construction
sales
materials.
Tax exemption. Yep. Okay,
yes.
Great. Thank you. So I'm going to move that we adopt the A1 author's amendment. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion carries. The A1 is adopted, and the bill is in the form that the chair or the author would like. To your bill, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this bill is authorizes Brooklyn Park to create three new TIF districts and one value capture district to harness the full future development capacity of the city to reinvest back into the community and region. The proposed districts reflect the unique needs of different parts of Brooklyn Park and the unique vision for those distinct parts of our community. The city currently utilizes TIF well below the state average. Our ability to take on the added TIF capacity allows Brooklyn Park to strategically align with the needs of our growing region, rebalance our tax base, and support the state its pursuit of medical and biotech opportunities. Madam Chair, I also have the Mayor, Mayor Wiston, here with me to provide a more full and detailed presentation, along with community development expert team here, including Jason Arswell from Ellers, to also provide additional details. And I'll yield my time for the rest of my testifiers.
Thank you very much, Representative Vang. Looks like we're getting there on our tech situation up there. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Wiston.
Okay. I think we're having a little bit of a...
Okay. Well, so everybody has copies of the slides in their packet, so that's these. Please take a look. And so we'll all be following along. Apologies to those of us, those folks in the public, but there are copies of the slides up at the front if anybody wants to follow along. So... with that, welcome, Mayor Wiston. Thanks for being with us. Please just introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
All right, so Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Hollis Winston. I'm mayor of the city of Brooklyn Park. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about what is an important opportunity for not just our city of Brooklyn Park, but we also believe the state of Minnesota, as well as some of those disparities that we hear everybody talk about that are so pernicious but haven't really been addressed, and those are around prosperity, housing, jobs, that wealth gap. So I think if we slide two, very quickly, just a little bit about Brooklyn Park. So I believe we're the fifth largest city in the state of Minnesota. Others would say sixth. There could be some mayor math involved in there, but we're not going to argue about that today. One thing we can agree about is that we are 60% people of color. So for a city of our size, we are the most diverse in the state of Minnesota. And one thing that Brooklyn Park has always represented has been opportunity. So we were on the affordable housing bandwagon before many others were on that bandwagon. And so when we talk about people investing not only in themselves and their businesses, which is a big thing in Brooklyn Park increasingly, but also, we were able to get it up. One second. This one? Is it this one? Is it showing? All right, great.
Oh, there we go.
All right, so thank you for your patience, everyone. So when we talk about folks increasingly investing in themselves, but also to build their community up, one of the things that we have seen is we have not seen that corresponding investment from the state level. So when we talk about even our public safety in the city of Brooklyn Park, our public safety represents 55 to 60% of our budget. That is not because we are overspending on our police department. It is simply because we just don't have the tax base, and it takes up a large percent of our budget. So if we look at the graph that's in front of us along that X-axis, that's really talking about our taxable net capacity per person. We just don't have a ton there. But if we look at the Y-axis and the LGA per capita, we're not receiving corresponding investment from the state as well. So we're not necessarily able to create the revenue ourselves, but over time we haven't received that. I think we're happy that, you know, we're included in the LGA formula this year. We were almost not included last year, but there's still a large gap in terms of what we can present as a city, and that affects many of the basic decisions that we make as a city, whether it's youth programming, public safety, and many other issues. We do believe that we have a way to address that, and that's with a biotech innovation district, which you see in front of you. One of the things that we have in Brooklyn Park is we have 700 acres of undeveloped land, 250 of that we're setting aside for a biotech innovation district. And so we believe we can create 8,000 to 10,000 jobs for that. Now, that rolls into the MedTech 3.0 vision that the state is aggressively pursuing. I think Greater MSP is actually in the second round of that at the federal level, and we are one of the partners that are actually considered for that. We have invested in workforce, and we have a small business center in Brooklyn Park that we actually started. But the other portion of this is going to get into the portion that maybe you're most concerned about is going to be that TIF and those value capture districts. So I think when we talk about that biotech innovation district, it's going to be located, so folks who are familiar from Plymouth to through Brooklyn Park, there's what we call Medical Alley. And I see some of the folks in the audience from there. It's going to be, and so when you talk about Boston Scientific, when you talk about Medtronic, in Brooklyn Park we have some of that as well. We also have Takeda. We have Olympus. And so we want to continue to build on that. We think this is important to not only Brooklyn Park, but to the state continuing to maintain the quality of life that it has experienced for quite some time. When we look at it, it would be above that 610 corridor to the north of that, but it would be on either side of 169, and we would look to nestle it there. I know some, I will say this, whether it's Metro Blue Line or whether it's expanded bus routes, we believe that there will be transportation there that will allow people to move from north to south and east to west to be able to access these jobs. Brooklyn Park, there are areas where people are landlocked, and we just want to make sure that included in that people are able to move out of that and to have access to these opportunities that we're speaking about. Just to visualize it, because there's not a ton of areas, at least in the metro area, that have 700 acres available, this is just a piece of what it looks like. And so for us, we're saying 8,000 to 10,000 jobs, when you talk about a city that's diverse, making sure that everybody, whatever your ethnicity, is getting opportunities to this job. As a city, we've already invested in a program called BrookLink, which has been quite successful with hundreds of youth, connects them to manufacturing jobs, trains them ahead of time. I think sometimes we get a little concerned about work ethic of those coming up. Well, we help folks understand that. We also help them how to interact with these new businesses that are coming along. When we move next to the TIF and value capture districts, I think this is the part that y'all are maybe most interested in. We're proposing adjustments to TIF in a few key geographies. We can get into that a little bit. If you look here, you know, there's going to be five stops, whether it's light rail or whether it's expanded bus routes along that. But I want to make a point clear when we talk about tax increment financing. Brooklyn Park has recently, we've been pretty conservative in terms of our using our TIF. So we only use about 1% of our taxable value in our city. When we talk about St. Paul, they're at 9%, Rochester, 5%, Bloomington, 3.5%. But when we talk of those areas that are redeveloping, Fridley is at 16%, St. Louis Park is at 15%, Brooklyn Park is at 1%. So we have some room, we believe, to use our TIF. I think we're positioned to use this. I think it's important that we get access to this because, A, we have the land. We have the partnership. So when we talk about that partnership with Greater MSP, when we talk about Medical Alley that exists within our city, we have the capacity, so we're bringing people on board to help make this vision happen. And then at the state level, we know that MedTech 3.0 is something that is not only a priority, but it's something that's incredibly important to Minnesota staying at the top of the game for quite some time and giving us that quality of life that we've come to expect. The value capture districts are pretty strategic when we look at those five lines. We're just looking to capture what we think that value is going to be so that we can build out future infrastructure with that. And we think by capturing value from parcels that are within about a quarter mile radius of these plant stations, we can reinvest into transit-oriented development, some anti-displacement programs, and then community enhancement. And then, of course, there's some of the basic blocking and tackling. So I know I'm going a little quick on this, but if you look at that gray box to the northwest corner, right, the Biotech Innovation District, but then if you look a little further down, the second stop up from the south, right, we're talking about the Village Creek area. There's areas for development, both of them. One of them is greenfield for that biotech. The other one has been built out some, but there's some brownfield areas that we need to reinvest in. We also believe that will help us some of our public safety issues as well. So in terms of critical investment, this TIF would also allow for water infrastructure. So if you talk about building out the infrastructure for not only 8,000 to 10,000 jobs, but the workforce housing that goes along with that, water infrastructure is something that has to be provided. Again, growing and attracting businesses, helping to bring some of those businesses that maybe don't initially think the market is there. And then, of course, workforce development. We mean small W workforce development in terms of creating those jobs. But then housing as well. We know that not just at the metro area, but at the state level, right, there's a housing shortage. And so we're talking about doing our part as a city to help with that workforce housing and to build that out. And when we look at our city, sometimes we have to overcome how the market sees us as a city to provide this housing, and so this will help us to do that. So again, I want to thank everybody for the opportunity. We do have partners on this. I think two that we really want to mention is Greater MSP. They've kind of helped walk us through a lot of this process, and then Medical Alley, which I believe will be speaking later. But again, this is not just an investment in the city of Brooklyn Park. It's incredibly important to us in terms of being able to afford basic infrastructure like public safety and the parks and rec and youth programming that we need. The second piece is this. At the state level, Minnesota does have to be competitive when it comes to MedTech 3.0. We have the land, we've got the workforce, and then we're doing everything we can in our power to help incentivize those companies to come here. The third thing, which is always a concern of mine, is that we have heard people talk about disparities for quite some time, year after year, decade after decade, at least when it comes to our city, I would hope for across the state. I don't think we want to continue to have that conversation. A city that has 60% people of color and where many of those disparities reside, if that infrastructure, that economic infrastructure is built within those cities, in our city, you will begin to see at the state level those disparities go down, and you will have a state level impact because our city is willing to do everything we can to play our part at the state level. So again, I want to thank everybody for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Mayor Winston. We might want to invite you back up when we get to questions, but I'll just get through the testimony and then we'll move to member discussion. Next up, Ben Wagner. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, members of this committee, thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Ben Wagner. I'm with Medical Alley today. Medical Alley represents a global network of more than 800 leading health technology and care companies from all corners of the state of Minnesota. With access, affordability, and quality as top priorities, Medical Alley and our partners are committed to developing solutions which drive meaningful change and save lives. It's with these guiding principles that we extend our support for House File 5194, this tax bill and the broader legislative package which would establish a biotech innovation district in the city of Brooklyn Park. Progress in the biotechnology industry has the potential to improve lives in ways we've only just begun to imagine. From revolutionizing healthcare through personalized medicine and cutting-edge treatments to addressing global challenges such as food security, environmental sustainability, disease prevention, and more, biotechnology stands at the forefront of innovation. Brooklyn Park and the state of Minnesota have a unique opportunity here to position this region as a leader in this growing market, which may triple in size in the next 10 years. The city already has home to some of Medical Alley's leading partners in technology and manufacturing, including Medtronic, Steris, CVRX, and more. This district could catalyze further investment along these areas and beyond. And finally, to echo some of Mayor Winston's comments too, Brooklyn Park is home to nearly 90,000 residents, more than 60% of which identify as Black, Indigenous, or a person of color. The city is one of Minnesota's fastest growing and one of its most diverse. The establishment of a biotech innovation district could create 10,000 quality and sustainable jobs to the benefit of residents in the city and cities surrounding it, many of which currently face disparities in health, income, and public safety. We believe this district will make the Northwest Metro an international destination for biotech manufacturing and position Minnesota to attract new businesses, cultivate the next generation of the state's workforce talent, and ensure a brighter, more equitable future for all. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify on this bill? Not seeing any, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And would the mayor be willing to come back up to the table? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Winston. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Winston, just kind of looking at kind of a space standpoint, it looked like from your photos that this was already potentially a mixed area. Is this whole area that's 700 acres currently owned by the city, or who is the current owner of it?
Mayor Winston.
Thank you, Representative, for the question. I think if staff is allowed to speak, they can get more into the actual details. I would say, did you want to speak to any of this, or?
I think, do we have an economic development staff member who wants to?
I will say that the 250 is something that we're setting aside. The vast majority of that is, do you want me to get up and give you a chair?
You're good.
Okay. So,
John,
we can push one over for you.
So a large portion of that is the biotech is owned by the city. But when we talk about the full 700, that there's a mixture of people that own that, and I know that our economic development, I guess, I don't even want to say person, but authority, you're the authority on this in our city. She can speak to that better than I can, but the land does exist. It's just mixed in terms of ownership. That 250, we have a big portion of it.
Please identify yourself for the record before you get started.
Sure. I'm Kim Berger, and I'm the Director of Community Development for the city. And I would just, the only thing I would add to the mayor's comments is that the 700 acres, the city has a staged growth plan, so that is mostly greenfield. And it's been guided for mixed use, but we're just launching a land use study to get more specific about what would happen on that full 700 acres. The biotech zone is the perfect timing to talk about this biotech zone. The Economic Development Authority does own about 20 acres right in the corner of the biotech zone, so we have some ability to get started right away on things because of that ownership. But the other partner in the space is Target Corporation, who owns a big chunk of that land, and I know they're interested in developing it out along with some of the other property owners we've recently met with that are very excited about the opportunity.
Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just kind of from a development standpoint, are we looking at that's what kind of was my general question was, you know, if we're looking at current owners who already own space in this particular area, what percentage of them were willing to be doing the development themselves anyway, or is this contingent on whether or not this was going to be happening?
Mayor Winston or Ms. Bergeron?
What I would add is, what I would say to that is that there's only a handful of property owners in this particular area that is designated as biotech zone, and they are mostly interested in selling to development groups, and so we've talked to a few development groups that are very interested in this idea and have really encouraged us and offered to contribute to conversations on this topic to advance the idea of biotech in the zone.
Representative Sudzinski.
Madam Chair, I think the mayor wanted to add something.
Yeah, so
Mayor Winston.
So very quickly, to echo Kim's point, I will say that we have met with some of those potential developers, and whether it comes to workforce housing or even building some of the locations that these businesses would be at, there does seem to be some type of gap in terms of what they're willing to just finance as it exists right now, right? So I do think that's why we're saying, hey, we need to have some type of incentivization because the land is there, the workforce is there. How do we make sure that this moves forward, especially for this area? So there is a need, and we know that there's a desire to move, but there's also this additional incentive that needs to be put in place to make it happen.
Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be the last question because
okay.
I know you've got a good stack of work to do today. And just kind of a last standpoint, Mayor, you mentioned a few times kind of a public safety standpoint. You know, you brought that up a couple times during your conversation. Can you flesh that out? Like, what are some of the issues there in town? Like, how will this potentially impact from a public safety standpoint? And kind of you said it would help alleviate some of that, I think was your quote, and just trying to understand that as a rural member.
Mayor Winston, briefly.
Yeah, I was going to say you don't want to ask a mayor about public safety. But I will say this. We believe that public safety follows the economic opportunities that are available for folks. So even when we talk about not just the biotech area, but we talk about the Creekside, which is older and more developed, right, where there are areas there where we see no opportunity. People are landlocked in terms of access to jobs. And so we feel like if we're able to offer those various opportunities, that will allow people to have much more positive options. The second thing is just basic math. If we don't have enough tax revenue to really beef up our police department or to do some of the violence intervention work that we want to do, that puts us in a difficult spot when we say we want to over time push down the crime that we see in our city. It is on a downward decline, but there are certain areas that are pernicious that we really want to push down. And the reality is that's going to take investment. And where we would get that would be from tax revenue that we generate over time as a city. We don't want to put ourselves behind the eight ball. So this is a big part of it. It's saying, how do we have the basic resources to make sure our city has what it needs going forward?
Thank you, Mayor Winston.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I just want to point out a couple things. The TIF, as we all know, is generally used for blight. It's used for redevelopment, which is why they're asking for the blight standard. It's never or rarely, I don't know in my experience, used for vacant land, for just vacant, undone, you know, which is why this is coming here. And the other, typically when you have development, you generate more property taxes to the increment in a normal, not a TIF district, and that's how you pay for public safety and parks. So this proposal is you know, vacant property, undeveloped property. They're asking, that's not blighted, they're asking for to be allowed to actually take part of the increment to pay for public safety and parks, which is how normal things work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's something that if we start opening this can of, I understand you want to build medical, or, you know, the area, but if we start opening this sort of thing, every city that has undeveloped property is going to be coming in and asking us to, you know, TIF their fields, right? So they can, you know, so I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
There are some benefits to having a former state auditor on the tax committee. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Who audited TIF district?
Yeah, I think the only piece I was...
Mayor Hollis. I'm sorry. Mayor Winston.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to that is that there's not a lot of places in the metro area that have 700 acres available. I would also say that, yes, we want the investment so that we can build the city up so that we're not coming back here 10, 15, 20 years from now asking for more public safety, nor do we want to be in the news 20 years from now because of whatever public safety issues people are talking about. And I understand when you're referring to the biotech, but there are some areas within Brooklyn Park that have suffered from blight, and we've been relatively aggressive in trying to address that, but still some of that exists, right? So I think it's not just focusing on just biotech. There are a number of areas that we have to address as a city. Otherwise, we're going to be coming back 10, 15 years now for asking for something very different, and it won't be something that we're in control of. We'll be trying to play some type of catch-up.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Very quick. A typical TIF district, the extra tax increment is used within the district, as you know, for utilities, land purchases, tearing down buildings, et cetera. It's not used for general government services. That increment typically stays within the district. So police, fire, parks, those things that are general government services, by TIFing something rather than letting it go through a normal development process, you're actually hurting the city except that this bill says that you want to do it anyway. So I just want to, again.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thanks.
I'm done. Mayor Winston, real quick, I have other bills, and we have a couple of more people who need to speak, and, you know.
I'll make it very quick.
Yes.
I will say that the bill does not exist just to address the public safety, right? I think the bill exists for many of the purposes that traditionally exist for this, so we're not saying we want this bill for public safety. I think what we're saying is part of the reason we're looking down the road that this needs to be addressed is to address that. So I understand your point to that. We're saying working backwards, right? These are the things that we need to address to build up this type of development.
Thank you. Representative Davids, I'm maybe going to say a couple things, so I don't know if you want to go first or...
A real quick question on this is, I know what a greenfield is, but it's green. But a brownfield, I think somebody mentioned brownfields. How big of a problem in that 700 acres are brownfields?
Mayor Winston or Ms. Bergeron?
So I think the biotech is, I get it, it's very exciting. But there's another area, the Creekside area, where there is some of that brownfield area, and that's what we were referring to. We were not tying the brownfield to the biotech necessarily, but the Creekside area, which has been, Brooklyn Park was built stage-wise, right? So it was built from south to north. That area is still struggling with that, while other areas are kind of leaving that behind. So there is some areas that needs to be addressed and that needs to be dealt with. Otherwise, it's going to affect the entire city.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there any further member discussion? Representative Robbins.
Thank you. I'll be brief. So I noticed in your value capture district that you're tying it to within a half mile of the Blue Line light rail. I'm not a fan of this project, and I'm working with Representative Tabke on not having it be light rail. So I just wondered, you know, if we are successful in switching that to a bus rapid transit line, if the statute is so specific to light rail, how will you address that?
Representative Hollins, I know that, Representative Robbins, and I know that Mayor Winston addressed that this was related to this value capture district was related to transit stops, whether it was a train or a bus rapid transit.
Yes, I said that a couple of times. So whether it's train, whether it's buses, we know that there needs to be more robust. We've been talking to Metro Transit about that. So that was the plan, was whether it's light rail, whether it's expanded bus we would build around that access, which doesn't currently exist, but there's a plan to have that exist.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. I would just point out that the language is still very restricted to light rail, so that's something you should look at going forward.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? I guess I just did, because we are in the regular tax committee and we're not in property taxes, so we haven't seen a lot of these in this committee. And I did just want to mention, to Representative Anderson's point, that any time we see a TIF bill at the legislature, it means that we're being asked to provide exceptions to rules that exist, because cities are allowed to do TIF by right if they comply with the requirements in statute as laid out. So, I do think that it's really important that, this particular bill has a lot of exceptions that are being asked for. I think you've made your case about your project, but, our job as the tax committee is to look at, the issue about setting precedent is real. That's what happens when we provide exceptions to the general use of these types of tools. The value capture district is sort of a novel thing. I know of it being used one other time on a project in Minneapolis that didn't ever happen. I wanted to just say that, there are a lot of exceptions being requested here. And we're going to continue to, this bill is being laid over. We're going to continue to work on it. Just for everybody's knowledge, it's like we are being asked to diverge from what is sort of normal, how TIF is normally used in statute and how that's outlined. So with that, I will renew my motion. Oh, sorry, excuse me. Chair Vang, sorry.
Thank you, Madam
any,
Chair.
Any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the committee for a discussion, and thank you to Mayor Winston and his team for being here. And I just want to say the federal has made a move in investing in biotechnology. The state has also made investments in organizations and bio-related things as well. And the city of Brooklyn Park had decided to step up the charge in that. So this is an opportunity for many of us, for the region, for the city, and for the state. So I look forward to the community support.
Thank you very much, Chair Vang, and thank you so much for being here,
thank you.
Mayor Winston. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 5194, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 budget bill, tax budget bill, and it is laid over. All right. Up next, Representative Cha with House File 3559, and I'm going to move that House File 3559 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Representative Cha, welcome to the committee, to your bill.
Thank you for having me back, as this is the first committee that I produced my first bill. Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the tax committee. I'm here today to present House File 3559. This bill is about access to clean water, which here is some water from Woodbury that I brought with me. This bill is to provide sales tax exemption for construction materials for Woodbury's much-needed water public infrastructure. As you may know, Woodbury is the seventh largest city in Minnesota. Like most of the East Metro cities, Woodbury is dealing with the PFAS and the corresponding need to provide new, clean water treatment solutions. This bill will help ensure access to safe and clean drinking water for 80,000 residents and 28,000 households. It will help also mitigate the challenges of clean water in Woodbury. I appreciate that the policy of exempting local units from paying state sales tax on construction public facilities has historically been a nonpartisan and been granted to many communities across Minnesota over time. I also respect the committee has a budget target to honor, and I would like to work with the committee going forward. Madam Chair, if you would permit, I would like to yield time to Mary Van Millen, from the Woodbury Public Works Director, who is here with me, for some comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Van Milligan. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives, for allowing the City of Woodbury to come before you today. I'm Mary Van Milligan, Public Works Director for the City of Woodbury. I'd like to begin by thanking Representative Cha for his support and leadership in assisting the City of Woodbury on this issue. Woodbury has been focused on issues related to water for over a decade. Water conservation and protecting this precious natural resource has long been a top priority in Woodbury. We've taken action to protect this resource by implementing practices such as a tiered water rate structure where people pay more as they increase their use, one of the most restrictive lawn watering policies in the state, and irrigation efficiency incentive programs have saved over 143 million gallons of water annually. Water quantity remains one of our top priorities. However, over time, water quality has emerged as a top issue for Woodbury due to the discovery of PFAS in the groundwater. The City of Woodbury has taken proactive steps to address this issue by building several temporary water treatment facilities to continue to deliver the highest quality of water possible to our residents and businesses. In the meantime, we're currently in the design phase of constructing long-term PFAS treatment solution with the completion of a water treatment plant, which is slated to start construction later this year. While the 3M settlement fund will cover a good portion of the construction costs of the plant, the city is still facing a significant funding gap of up to $40 million to complete the project. The city is doing everything we can to reduce the burden placed on our residents by the situation brought on by an outside entity. Eliminating the sales tax on city-funded materials, supplies, and equipment used in construction of our water treatment plant would be a step in that direction. Therefore, on behalf of the City of Woodbury, I humbly ask you to pass HF 3559, which provides a refundable exemption for construction materials for our water treatment plant. We're aware that this type of request has been granted for public facilities and would appreciate your support with this common sense tax policy to help the City of Woodbury reduce the cost of our much needed project. An infographic of the project is in your materials. And again, thank you, Madam Chair and representatives, for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't have anybody else signed up. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on this bill? Not seeing anyone. We're going to move to member discussion. I sort of should have offered a couple of comments before we move to these next two bills, so I'm kind of going to interject here for just a moment. So we have received a number of bills from members on both sides of the aisle all over the state for exemptions, sales tax exemptions for construction materials, as sort of Representative Cha and Ms. Van Milligan referenced. We have, you know, it's sort of like there's this kind of quirk in the way the law is administered that makes it so that the intended sales tax exemption to local governments is, you know, difficult to apply for. So we grant these exemptions or have for several years. We've gotten a lot of them. I, up till now, haven't heard any. And the reason that I'm hearing this bill and the next bill, which is Representative Wiener's bill, out of the couple dozen that have been submitted, all of which are for worthy projects and all of which are, you know, it's not to speak to the relative merits of the projects themselves in any way. But, you know, At like a lot of stuff around here, it kind of comes down to money at some point with granting these one-off exceptions. So last year we heard House File 1603, which is Vice Chair Norris authored that bill, and it was a blanket exemption for all of the construction materials sales tax exemptions. And so because we heard that, basically, like, all they're all in play. All the individual bills that members have filed are in play. But the reason that I'm giving hearings to these two today is because there is sort of a tradition in taxes that when a community across the state, you know, has experienced an emergent kind of disaster situation, that we try to figure out how to help them out. And so, you know, this is the situation Woodbury's in is sort of a slow moving disaster, but nonetheless, right, it impacts drinking water, which is sort of one of those most basic things that everybody deserves to have access to, and that, you know, is a public good that we need to protect as those who are stewards of our government. And, you know, we'll hear from Representative Wiener about what happened to a school in his district. So I guess I just wanted to say, like, you know, if you have a construction materials bill, it's in play potentially as we move into the conference committee process, but we're just hearing these two because we think it's important to kind of, you know, live up to this, to the tradition of trying to help communities when they've experienced disasters, natural or otherwise. This is not a natural disaster. This is an unnatural corporate disaster. Sorry, just wanted to say those things. We will now just go to member discussion. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cha, for this bill. I think it's a good one. I appreciate Representative Norris on this particular issue. This is an issue that has been working to be addressed for a very long time in the state. And, you know, I think one of the biggest issues is we're dealing with folks that are sales tax exempt. So cities, when they go out and they buy a 2x4, they don't have to pay sales tax on that. And so, you know, one of the big issues we do have is because of lump sum contracts, which is the main issue here, is where the contractor is actually buying on behalf of the city any materials. We would encourage, if the target would fit, that we would do this statewide. Madam Chair, I think this would be a good use of funds for cities that are addressing issues, especially in the water related and water and sewer particular, or building a library or whatnot that might be, or a school, as well as Representative Weiner, as Bill will hear shortly. And so I just want to just give my support to Representative Shaw's bill. I think it's a good one, especially in its addressing basic needs of what government does. And so with that, and I think, I imagine that the coalition and the other city organizations are here in support as well. And so we just, thanks for the bill and good to hear it. And we would definitely support this moving statewide so that we could, then we just have less to do here in committee. So.
And minimize our time together, representatives.
I mean, oh, you do enjoy it. You do enjoy it. So, I mean, yeah. I heard that when Representative Cha said something about being his first time here, I was automatically thought snacks, but that was not necessarily
true. I know. I did interrupt.
Woodbury water. So, hey, we'll take what we can get.
I didn't let them harangue you about snacks, but they worked it into their questions.
Oh.
Consider yourself harangued. Representative Olson B.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. This is one of my regular questions, and actually it's a statement in the form of a question again. The question is, why do we do it this way, and why do we consistently find ourselves in this position? This is a very admirable thing that we consistently go to. Why are we paying sales tax? And I understand what Representative Swidzinski went through, how it all kind of plays into the game. But we spend an awful lot of time exempting taxes that shouldn't be paid in the first place. And on the same part of it, how many other projects have fallen through the cracks of other cities, other organizations that either their representative wasn't on the ball and didn't know what was going on, or the city didn't know themselves what they could do? I feel like this making a blanket statement across the state would alleviate any potential what appears to be a Ponzi scheme or kind of a shell game of taxpayer dollars going to pay taxes that go to a different entity of government and then just turns back into local government aid. We're just moving taxpayer dollars around, and at the end of the day, here we are wasting time when we should be looking at one large way of dealing with this in general. My statement in the form of a question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Consider that a statement. Thank you, Representative Olson. Is there anyone else who wishes to comment on this bill? All right. Seeing none, Representative Cha, any final thoughts for us?
Yes, Chair Gomez, thank you for your remark and the clarification. Thank you to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, Swidzinski and Olson, for your remarks and support. This bill is about providing basic water rights and needs to families and children in Woodbury. And so, you know, I thank you and appreciate for the time and for your support, and please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3559 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. All right. Finally, on the docket, Representative 4892. Representative Weiner, welcome to your committee. I understand. Do you want to move that your bill, House File 4892, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will.
Excellent. So Representative Weiner has moved his bill, and I understand that you have an author's amendment also, the A1?
Correct. The amendment would just line up stuff with the Senate version.
Great. Would you like to move it?
Yes, please.
Representative Weiner has moved the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the form that you would like. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This fine piece of legislation today would help out a community in my district that dealt with a truly unique experience. If this had been a tornado, if this had been any other type of storm, it would have been considered an emergency, and there would have been funds made available. That was not the case. The roof of the school came down because of snow load, age of the building, and so forth. And because of the uniqueness of this, it is now in front of this committee. If this had been a regular expansion onto the school, we would not be here talking about it. So because of how this happened, it doesn't fall under the regular categories, and therefore it kind of fell through the cracks. And Todd County, my district, part of Browerville is in Todd County, part of the poorest district in the poorest county in the state. And really what we're looking for here is to help alleviate with that tax burden, sales tax on you know, construction material. So with that being said, I would turn it over to the superintendent, Scott Broughton, if you'd like to say a few words, please.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative Weiner. Welcome to the committee. There is, in our packet, there's a letter from the Independent School District number 787, and there's some pretty wild photos on the back. If everybody wants to check that out, and I'll turn it over to you, Mr. or Superintendent Vidbraten.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I cannot believe that I'm going to say this, but I really wish I would have been presented to you 1 year ago, because it actually came down 1 year ago, a week ago, and it was on April Fool's Day that I was notified that of the partial collapse of the gymnasium. And 22 hours later, on April 2nd, I had an emergency school board meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning, after working through the night, to notify my school board that we would be taking down the gymnasium in a controlled collapse, to safely and to protect and preserve the rest of the building. And at 11 o'clock on April 2nd, we did do that. And in order to do that, we needed to disconnect all water lines, all glycol lines, all electricity, to ensure that safety. And if we would not have done that, then the rest of the building would have been in danger as well, because the water tower would have drained into the entire high school. So those are the things that we were looking at and to preserve and protect the rest of the building. We sat back last Tuesday to reminisce what went on that day, to plan overnight how that was going to impact what we were going to do, because tearing down that building also meant that we were about to lose 7 classrooms that following Monday, because we needed to hold class, and we did hold class on Monday morning. And when we held class on Monday morning, guess who else walked through the door? The building inspector. And thank you very much that my principal is the fire marshal. And he greeted him at the door as well. And we passed with flying colors. But those are the things that we had to deal with. And we had to deal with those for 2 weeks, not having an extra 7 classrooms because of structural and safety of the building, to make sure that everything was shored and put back together. Now, a year later, this past November, my school district went to the public and passed a referendum on a 60-40 vote, which isn't an accomplishment by itself, because for the last year, we have been transporting students 5 miles to Phi-Ed, to practices, for basketball games, for volleyball games, because we no longer have a high school gym. Well, that high school gym used to be the neighboring school district, but that school district dissolved 7 years ago, the first school district to dissolve in the state of Minnesota in 40 years. I inherited that school district. Well, if you know anything about neighboring school districts, you know what? They really don't get along with each other. But I'll tell you what, kids do. and those kids merged and became one and are best of friends. But you want to know what? Parents, grandparents still hold old grudges. But they came together and voted because they knew what we needed to do to make our school successful. And I'll tell you what, they can't afford what they did because they passed a $16 million bond issue because the addition of my school is going to cost $21 million. $5 million was granted to us by insurance. The other $16 million is going to be through the bond issue. Hopefully some of that's going to come in bonding, but we're not sure. So we're here today to ask that 4892, which will help alleviate the tax burden on our public, which will be reinvested into our school and into our kids, will help make our community better. So that's why we're here. So thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Ved Bratton, for being with us. Moving, unless, is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on this bill on 4892, seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be remiss if Representative Davis is not in here, and I'm just trying to recall the name of your school mascot.
We're the Tigers.
The Tigers, okay, thank you. That's what I thought. As I think that's how Representative Davis would say it. But just from a secondary standpoint, just, you know, voicing our support for this, I was author of one of the first bills that actually extended this tax exemption to schools as well for the construction of a gym and school addition as well. And, you know, this is property tax, you know, from a standpoint that $600,000, I think, is what your general ask is for the reconstruction. That is either going to come out of local taxpayers' pockets or it's going to just simply be exemption, which the way it really should be. And so, Madam Chair, we just support that from our side of the aisle on that. If you wanted to run these as standalone bills, we would support that too. But if it does happen to be put into a larger bill, we'll look at what the rest of the bill looks like. But just Representative Weiner, have you had an opportunity to become, is this your first time in front of this committee or not? Or
Representative Weiner.
In front of this committee, yes, but I have had other bills before.
Representative Spudzinski.
In this committee, Madam Chair, Representative Weiner.
Representative Weiner.
For clarification, Madam Chair, Representative, for clarification, in front of this committee, yes.
Okay.
Not as a representative. I have had other
Representative Spudzinski, did you want to clarify sort of the rules around here a little bit? Or?
Madam Chair, just one more question to the
Representative Spudzinski.
You know, we do appreciate the job you do, Representative Weiner, and we just, you know, we look forward to any rectification or any fixing of any issues that may be before our committee, and we're happy to support your bills as much as we possibly dare. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I don't know how to follow that up, but you might be the last today, but you're number one in all of our hearts here. So thank you, Chair Gomez, for allowing us to hear this bill, and thank you for sharing your story. It helps us to understand where the little loopholes are, but the things that affect Minnesotans and also in your community. So I appreciate your guys' testimony, and I appreciate you allowing us to hear the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Witte. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Witte. We had the bonding bill up for informational hearing in the K-12 budget because it was an important bill to hear. And as you said, if this would have been any other type of accident or disaster, you would have gotten a little bit more help from the state. So this is the least we could do, is to do the sales tax construction on the construction material. I just want to thank you for coming all the way down here again.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Is there any further discussion? Not seeing any. Well, thank you, Superintendent Ved Bratton, for being here. We really appreciate your advocacy for your community and wish you the best of luck, and hopefully that we can help out a little bit. Representative Weiner, any final thoughts you wanted to share?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Joachim, for your kind comments. I appreciate it. Representative Witte as well, thank you for your comments. Not so much, Swiczynski. But appreciate being here. Thanks for consideration on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Wiener. With that, Representative Wiener will renew his motion that House File 4892, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. So Eid break tomorrow, no tax meeting. We will be back here on Thursday to hear bills at 1. We have a bunch of bills. Please be here on time if possible. I'm looking at my side of the aisle. And, you know, if we need to have our wide-ranging, robust tax conversations, we can come back after session on Thursday to finish up our business. But otherwise, hopefully we'll be able to move through things quickly. Representative Swiczynski, did you have anything to add?
Oh, just, Madam Chair, just kind of from a question on amendments and potential amendments, how will that work if we have an off day tomorrow and from a timing standpoint?
So it's taxes, no 24-hour rule.
Sounds good.
Wild West. Please, we will be any bill that people want to add as an amendment, we're good with hearing the bills. We don't have to ask our staff to, like, you know, draft something new, just generally. Right. That mostly, you know, applies to the big bill that we'll be hearing in the next couple of weeks, but just in general, you know, we sort of have a little bit of a looser thing in taxes. So is there anything else? Okay, well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right. There being no further business in front of the committee, we are adjourned.